Good morning and welcome to your Biz News Briefing. It's Monday, the 29th of September. Today's show has a strong focus on crime and corruption as the Matlanga Commission continues making headlines across the country. We'll cover the DA's announcement of their mayoral candidate for eThekwini and hear insights from two leading figures in the South African business community on the current state of the country's operating environment. And on the international front, a new batch of 18,000 emails in the Epstein saga come to light. While Matlanga Commission continues to put crime and corruption firmly in the national spotlight, over the weekend, the DA podcast featured two key voices on the issue of crime and corruption in South Africa. Ian Cameron, chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Police, and JP Smith, mayoral committee member for safety and security. First, let's hear from JP Smith on some of the solutions he feels must be urgently tabled to get control of crime and corruption.
The national government can't put a plaster on this. There is a substantial policing investigation or an investment that is going to be required to fix this. And don't say whole of society. Because you cannot get businesses to create more jobs. You cannot get sports programs to keep kids busy if the bullets are flying. You cannot do any of these things to normalize until you've stabilized. So we do have to have the short-term stabilization in order to even run any of those other things meaningfully. And so I think that there is a lot of blame for the state of SAPS has to be accepted by national government. There is obviously a refusal to accept it, a constant attempt to shift blame, even by their own ANC colleagues who sustain misinformation campaigns. And until they're honest about it, they probably won't fix it. I am hopeful that the acting minister will start making the right steps, and he must know that we are loyal to the country, we are loyal to South Africa. We're patriots. We want this to succeed. If SAP succeeds, we succeed. It's not us versus them. So whatever we can do to assist SAPs, we do. Last week, the mayor gave SAPs another one of our facilities. That's the fifth facility or property now in the last couple of years because they've not been able to resolve these facility problems themselves. We take the overflow calls at our call center when 10111 is struggling. We help them in every way we can, and we will continue to do so. Not in our interest or in SAPS's interest, but in the interest of the public who depend on us to succeed and to work together.
That was JP Smith outlining some of the proposed strategies. Ian Cameron also shared his perspective on the challenges and possible way forward.
To me, in terms of the double strategy, the one is trying to fix what can be fixed in SAPS. Lifestyle audits and skills audits are critical. Both of them, we finally made a resolution of Parliament at the end of 2024 that they have to do skills audits before the end of this year. I don't think it's going to happen because of all the chaos at the moment, but at least we have something to fall back on and we'll push for that. Along with that lifestyle audits, we need to make sure that all the rotten apples are removed. Now, Public Works recently said that they were running something like 400 concurrent lifestyle audits at a time. Why can't SAPS do the same thing? We can certainly clean up, at least if we start with the top 50 or the top 100, and just start at the top level to fix our discipline and command structure, it will definitely make an impact on the way down. Then the last two or three, the one is the SAPS amendment bill that we've been waiting for many, many, many years. We really need that because a lot of the disciplinary issues need to be resolved through that. Unfortunately, in terms of unions, there has been a lot of damage as well, especially because people weren't being honest. They were confusing themselves between being fair labor reps and defense lawyers. And that criminal defense lawyer side unfortunately got the better of them. That's why Paul Mashatile's bodyguards were basically told that they're good to go in terms of disciplinary process. So that's that side. In terms of how I see it, just the basics of the devolution or decentralization process, I think it could be an absolute game changer if we could see that, for example, gang-related gun crime could be that start of it, to say here's an immediate force multiplier, you are allowed to investigate X, Y, and Z. We can carry that docket, or the city or provincial government can carry that docket to the prosecutor and drive that process and include some of the forensics too. A lot of these things fall through because gunshot residue is not taken. The relevant ballistic testing isn't done in time, and eventually the case is thrown out because of the time lapse, amongst other things. So that's how I would see it. And I think the mind shift from SAPS should be that this isn't competition, it's the ultimate force multiplier.
Meanwhile, on the NDB Sunday show, Chris Steyn interviewed Willem Els, a former police officer, now with the Institute for Security Studies. Els has closely followed nearly 2 weeks of testimony at the Madlanga Commission of Inquiry. He commended KZN Provincial Police Commissioner Lieutenant General Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi for his thorough presentation of evidence and highlighted the significant pressure faced by National Police Commissioner Fani Masemola during his appearance. Notably, Els described Major General Petronilov van Rooyen's very direct testimony as a potential game changer. Here's Els on what these developments could mean for the commission's outcome.
So I would hope that that lessons have been learned, and that there will be some adherence to some of the, at least some of the recommendations, but also that the commission will actually commission some further investigations into criminal cases. But also that the recommendations in terms of to clarify the gray areas that actually led to this thing, what is the minister's mandate? Because, you know, Section 206 and 207 of the Constitution, it's actually very clear in some cases, in some instances, what does the minister do and what does the National Commissioner do? But there's some gray areas that were exposed, and that's open to interpretation. So we believe that there might be some recommendations on that side as well that that might be done. But at the end of the day, I think the hope of South Africa is that we get to the bottom of this, and that this can be the first step in starting to take back our streets from criminals and the restoration of the rule of law.
You can find the full interview with Willem Els on BizNews TV on YouTube.
Discover Southern Africa with DCC Hotel Group, your trusted partner for a safe African safari. From Serengeti to Cape Town, explore luxury lodges, witness the Big Ten, and savor wines. Enjoy seamless booking, 24-hour support. Book with confidence.
Like a soapy breakup scene, selling your car can be an emotional experience.
Just how dramatic was the car selling experience?
Not dramatic at all. I did my research and We Buy Cars was by far the best price.
Very not dramatic. But I like drama.
I was standing there watching my phone, waiting for the money to get in, and there it was.
Yes. Car. Driving.
We Buy Cars. The easiest way to sell your car, by far.
I wouldn't mind a little more drama. Anybody bring me some tears?
Turning to the business sector, there are signs of progress on the ground, according to Business for South Africa. I spoke with Simon Baloyi, CEO of Sasol and leader of the energy workstream, who shared his thoughts on South Africa's current direction.
Brody, you recall that there was three key interventions. There was one on energy. Energy is the foundation or the bedrock, I think, of any economy. Then there was an intervention on logistics. We saw the work that has been happening, especially at Transnet for transport and logistics, because that allows our economy almost to pump in full cylinders. If we can export, that allows us to earn the much needed foreign currency. And there's also an intervention on crime and corruption where the governance, in general, has to be improved. So if you ask me, and that's my message to all the fellow countrymen, I said something this good as what we have now in terms of the country. I mean, the people, the landscape, the geography, the minerals, I mean, the good climate, it is worth preserving. So what does that mean? That means all of us must be willing to do work. So from a business point of view, we want to partnership with government. And from where I am, I mean, I'll start from the elections. When the elections happened in May and there was no outright winner, I mean, all of us were concerned in terms of what was going to be the outcome. And I must commend the political principals, I mean, across the board for formulating and coming up and forming a government in 14 days. And we're all, of course, excited that we formed the government. However, like they said, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. So for me, it's all about delivery now. So I think what we need to do, I mean, as business, as civil society, and even as government, we must all come together and be obsessed on delivery rather than, it is from my point of view, I mean, talking. I mean, this country is so good at coming up with perfect plans and lots of talk shops. I think for me, we must just act. We already have lots and lots of good plans. There's already momentum. The partnership between government and B4SA shows that momentum, that if we work together, we can start getting traction. And that's what we need to do. We need to work. It might not be perfect. We can self-correct. I think for me, where the country finds itself in terms of growth, should be unacceptable to all of us because this low growth leads to unemployment.
You can catch that full interview on the Biz News TV YouTube platform. That's with Sam Beloy, the CEO of Sasol. Neil Froneman, who leads the Crime and Corruption B4 South Africa workstream, also offered his insights.
Listen, I am for the first time very worried about South Africa. Look, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. And I think the GNU is a very important part of what I'm going to say. And the GNU, in my mind, creates light at the end of the tunnel. But I don't want anyone listening to this thinking that I'm saying it's all good and rosy. It's not. There's a huge amount of work to do. But the fact that we now seem to have more of a balance in government, but it's not a constructive balance, don't get me wrong. But at least we have political parties, and in particular the DA, digging in its heels and saying no. Now I know the president feels that is negative. It's not negative. That is exactly how a coalition works. They cannot always agree, especially when there are proposals to do the wrong things. And you know, all credit to those political parties that see their role as doing the right things. And you know, that's how we run companies. The most difficult decisions are the ones that are normally about doing the right things, and they're not popular decisions. And that's where government, in my view, thinks that friendly relationships are good relationships. They're not. Credible relationships are one where you respect and you involve your counterparties in the right way. So. I think my view is the ANC is in desperate trouble. There's a lack of delivery. And listen, it's very bad to generalize, and I will come back to that shortly. But, you know, there's at local government level, there's, you know, and we can talk about Johannesburg, there's a complete mess, to be honest. People are running these municipalities that are not competent. How they get there, you know, defies logic. And it takes good people and hard work to run these type of organizations and deliver to the people that you represent as a civil servant. What I want to say is that, you know, we engage with government at the highest levels and at levels below, let's call it political leadership. And I liken it to a company. You know, we've bought companies that have failed. And quite honestly, you know, we are talking about a failure of state here. And those companies are comprised of good people but bad leadership. So when we talk of government, there are lots of good people within government working hard, just as despondent about crime and corruption as you and I are. And therefore, we got to be careful when we generalize. We got to blame leadership. This is not, you know, bad companies, you change leadership and you put in good leadership and the same company then works well.
Again, Neil's full interview is available on BizNews TV. In political news, the Democratic Alliance made headlines this weekend with the announcement of their mayoral candidate for Etiquini. Here's DA leader John Steenhuisen with the official announcement.
The DA's mayoral candidate for Etiquini, the man with a plan, Hanif Hussein.
For those unfamiliar, Mr. Hussein is a seasoned public servant from Durban. He previously served as the Secretary General of the Independent Democrats, was a councillor on the Durban Metro Council from 1996 to 2001, and joined the Independent Democrats National Executive Committee before being elected Secretary General in 2007. Mr. Hussein entered National Parliament in 2008, representing the Democratic Alliance, and has served as the DA Shadow Minister for Home Affairs, as well as a member of the Standing Committee of the Auditor General. Here's Hussein sharing his vision for Etiquini.
My dear friends, we have the difficult task of turning around more than two decades of poor governance, mismanagement and corruption. And I know and I believe that it is possible. But I also know that over the next 12 months, there will be those who will want to break our spirits. They will tell us that what we are trying to achieve is impossible. There will be those who will want to divide us with racial insults and call us names. And again, I am reminded of what this community taught me. I won't give up. I know you won't back down.
No.
Because we know what's possible, and let me tell you why. All over this beautiful country, more and more South Africans are realizing that we can build a better country if we resist the temptation to be divided on race and fight for competence and good governance instead. There is something amazing happening in our time. People have had enough. They're tired of being divided because we may look different. They are tired of being lied to. People are tired of being part of racial voting blocks. South Africans want better, and they deserve better.
On the international front, a batch of more than 18,000 emails from Jeffrey Epstein's personal Yahoo account obtained by Bloomberg News reveal new details about academics, attorneys, and media specialists who helped him in different ways and to varying degrees, just as his life threatened to spin out of control. The emails, which spanned 20 years, but mostly were exchanged between 2005 and 2008, shine new light on an elite network whose members defended Epstein in public and private. Bloomberg's Max Abelsing joined Carol Massar and Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Businessweek Daily to break it all down.
You know, Epstein, who remains so profoundly central to the public imagination, and yet such a profound enigma.
Mm-hmm.
Bloomberg News obtained, you know, thousands, more than 10,000, more than 18,000 emails. And I want to be clear: these are private emails. These aren't things that have been recycled through. It's not things everyone knows about. This is new stuff, and it's from a private email address. Actually, for example, there was one email where someone says, listen, I need to talk to you about something private. What email would be good? And he writes back and says, this one, to give you a sense of what we're talking about here. And my colleagues, including Harry Wilson and others, did some really remarkable reporting on Peter Mendelssohn, who mm-hmm. lost his job as the UK ambassador to the United States.
Exactly.
In the wake of their story. Ava Benny Morrison and Jason Leopold have done, and others have done great work on Ghislaine Maxwell and really carefully showing that her relationship to Epstein was just much deeper and their partnership was much closer than either have had admitted. And what this story, which I wrote with this wonderful team, what this story is about is in some ways, I hope, you know, not the usual. You know, Epstein is, of course, in some ways a story about sex and sex crimes. But I think what you'll find is that what this story is about is about what I cover. It's really a story about money and a story right. about power and a story about connections. And that's how we talked about it with our editors, including Lauren Etter.
And it's a but. Can I just pop
please,
in
please.
That there's a bunch of people pictures, and I'll be honest with you. I think when we both look, I didn't recognize most of them.
Well, that's what I think was so notable about this. I mean, there are certainly the names that have been associated with Epstein for years, like Alan Dershowitz, for example.
Right.
And there's
mm-hmm.
new information, new emails from there, and a conversation that your team had with him about that. But there's also a name that I'd never seen before. Mary Spaeth, somebody who's a crisis strategist. She was director of media relations at one time for the White House under Ronald Reagan.
Yep.
What role did she serve?
Well, thanks for that question, because I think what's special about the piece, and I hope viewers and listeners check it out, I think what makes it a valuable piece of journalism, especially at this moment when Epstein is really in the news and is all of a sudden has gone from being a, you know, an exclamation point to a real question mark. And there are a lot of questions about what's going to happen now over the next mm-hmm. few days and weeks and months with Epstein and his files. What our story is about and why Mary Spaeth comes up is that it's about the depth and the breadth of his relationships. And, you know, it is not a story about Republicans versus a story about Democrats. It's a story about powerful people. And it's a story about different kinds of power. It's a story about academics and mm-hmm. researchers, people who make it into high elite echelons of the intellectual life. It's about people who offer, like Mary Spaeth offers, a basically strategy for people who are in trouble, crisis strategy, public relations. And it's a story about counselors and lawyers. And to answer your question about Mary, there was a point, believe it or not, where investigators are closing in on Jeffrey Epstein. This is early 2008. You know, he's about to go to jail for the, it's like about a year. It's a little bit longer than a year.
Right.
And after that, he's a free man for a very long time, I think about a decade, until the 2019 charge, sex trafficking. And then he dies. He's found dead in prison or jail right after that. But back in 2008, investigators are circling. Epstein's in trouble. And what do we find in these emails? But these draft apology options, where she sends him three different kinds of apologies. One's very meek. Talks about his memories of being a kid. Mm-hmm. It's actually, I found it very deep. I imagine, you know, yeah. all of us remember being kids and having to apologize. Second one is very short. It's really terse. The third one, it's the word we use is elegiac, and it is. He cites William James. I'm hoping it's the first Bloomberg News story that calls out William James, 19th century American philosopher. Talks about the hour of terror and the hour of satiety. How about that word? And he talks about the American dream. Talks about the American dream and his substantial rewards. And he says this is a public and heartfelt apology.
I just want to say Spaeth's firm was hired through a lawyer to provide communications options for Mr. Epstein and his legal team. She said in response to questions for the story, she said, quote, "I ultimately terminated the engagement because of my discomfort with it."
That brings us to the end of today's BizNews briefing. Thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to BizNews TV on YouTube and check out the other interviews and updates available. Thanks, as always, for joining us.